Chase Willie, D Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are broadcasting live at the Murphy Center today on the campus of MTSU, Middle Tennessee State University. Hope you're having a great start to your Thursday. Chase McCabe and Derek Mason here with you. Willie Donick is in Winnipeg. He'll join us later in the show as the Predators will take on the Jets later on tonight. This is cool to be here today because on December 11th, that was the 50th anniversary of the Murphy Center. And I know that I spent a lot of time in here as a student at Middle Tennessee State University. They've redone the courts. First time I've seen the gray court, which is pretty cool, that is new. But an awesome celebration that they have. I was walking through. They have a timeline of all the big events that have happened here at the Murphy Center over the last 50 years. And it's pretty cool to see all the events that have taken place there. But they'll play Chattanooga tonight. We'll have coverage on 94.9 The Fan starting at 5:30, a 6 o'clock tip, as Nick McDevitt and his crew will play here at the Murphy Center. What's up, D-Mace?
Hey, what's going on? Just trying to find the entrance.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah, no. You found it.
Hey, listen, you know, you like that fork in the road? Like,
yeah.
Which way do you go, right or left? Well, I went right.
You should have gone left.
Should have gone left.
I feel that.
And I walked all the way around the building.
I feel that.
And finally found the entrance.
Well, you know what? You're here now.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
And there's going to be some hoops tonight with MTSU
taking
on Chattanooga. One thing that you'll like that I was just telling the listeners about is they have a timeline of all the big events that have happened here at Murphy Center over the last 50 years.
Okay.
As they celebrate the 50th anniversary. I mean, Garth Brooks has played here. There's some big concerts here. You know, I love wrestling. Hulk Hogan wrestled here.
Did they add us into it when we did our show here some years ago?
You know, I need to go see if that's
exactly,
on there. That should
yeah.
be here. The game of horse that we had where I looked. I mean, that was the first time I think y'all saw me shoot a basketball. And
yeah, and it didn't look too good, Chase.
No, that's okay.
But you know what? That wasn't your calling in life,
no,
man. It
no,
wasn't.
No,
you know?
My calling was not to play sports. It was to talk about it.
Absolutely. There we go.
And that's exactly what we're doing. Coach Nick McDevitt of MTSU is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. So we'll talk to him about his season. And, you know, he's a NASCAR fan, too. So that'd be pretty cool. But let's start things off with – and I know you guys, you and Caroline and Willie talked about it a little bit, but Mike Sando's – article that he had in The Athletic on the firing of John Robinson and, you know, could the Titans become the Texans. Mike Sando actually was on with our morning show today. It was a really good interview. You can go to thegamenashville.com. But I thought, you know, I think it's interesting to kind of hear how people are starting to view the Titans. And when I mean view the Titans, I mean Amy Adams Strunk.
Exactly.
And you start to hear comparisons to her dad. That concerns me a little bit.
Yeah, that's not good, you know, because Bud did a lot of good things for, you know, the Houston Oilers / Tennessee Titans. You know, he took that team, I believe, from the AFL to the NFL. And built a franchise that, you know, for a time period there, they were competing and competing at a high level. And then you fire Bum Phillips and the team, you know, dips down and they go through their years. Then they come back up with the addition of Warren Moon, the receivers, the run and shoot, Lorenzo White. And then all of a sudden they dip back down again for a bit. They hire Jeff Fisher. Floyd Reese comes in away this franchise go. And we all know from 99 to about 2003, this team was considered one of the best teams in the National Football League, took a trip to the Super Bowl, had two AFC championship appearances in that span. And then they fire subsequently in 04, they bust up the roster. Year after that, they get rid of Steve McNair. Then they fire Floyd Reese.
Yep.
So this, you know, and now Amy fires a winning GM. So there's been, just like any other franchise, but you just didn't expect this from the Tennessee Titans. You know, a few days ago, listening to Jared and Caroline, and, you know, when this is done, you think a franchise is like Cleveland, Cincinnati, Detroit, the franchises that, you know, make their living in mediocrity or even below that. You don't think of the Tennessee Titans when you think of moves like what happened the other day. But it did. And now people are trying to figure out, is this franchise headed in the wrong direction? Because you've never seen a winning GM get fired with five games left in a season. Well, this franchise has fired a winning coach and they fired a winning GM. That's not good.
No, no. And that's, look, I think that's where things could catch up to him. Mike Sando, earlier this morning with Robbie and Rex Road, and was asked about how the NFL views owner Amy Adams Strunk.
I think they're much like everyone else, where you don't really know. I think that there's not a great body of work, and people are reading it from afar. And shoot, I live in the Seattle area, and no one knew that much about Paul Allen. He owned the team for 20 years. And now his sister is running it, and people are trying to figure out her, and she's been doing it for 2 years. And during that time, they've traded Russell Wilson and done things that we didn't know was going to happen, right? And so I think they're the same as everyone else. It's not like these owners necessarily are meeting every day or having deep, in-depth conversations that trickle down to the management level into the realm of the types of people that I'm talking to all the time. So I think it's a little bit of a guessing game along those lines. We may read too much in any one move because it's all we got.
That's Mike Sando of The Athletic this morning. He said something interesting there where most people don't know. And I kind of think that's been the case for a while, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. Now, I feel like around here, we've gotten to know what she's about. You know, is she the best owner? No. Is she the worst? No. I mean, she's obviously done some good things with the franchise to get them back to where they needed to be. But those good things were hiring John Robinson, hiring Mike Vrabel, kind of stepping out and letting the football people do the football things, letting the business people do the business things. And then she makes a move like this. And so now people are starting to realize who she is and get to know her, but I think it's for the wrong reasons. And that's a concern.
Yeah, it is. I'm trying to figure this out because I think sometimes – and Amy has done some things that has put this franchise, has turned it back in the right direction. Because before Malarkey, I think this franchise was headed in the opposite direction. And she made the hire of John Robinson. And then subsequently, John Robinson ended up firing a winning coach, a head coach, to go with Mike Vrabel, and it worked out. But what you do the others sometimes, just sometimes, you know, may be done to you. And you end up firing in a winning coach, and Amy end up firing a winning GM. But honestly, we don't know anything about Amy Adams. Honestly, if you really think about it, we don't know anything about her other than what she has shown us. You know, she has done some good things for the organization. She has revamped that facility. But other than that, we don't know too much about her. Just like, you know, Sando said, they didn't know anything about Paul Allen in Seattle. And he owned the team for 20 years. You know, so when we say we know about Amy Adams, we don't know a damn thing about Amy Adams other than what she has shown us. And that is she's willing to put the money in, you know, put the money to, you know, fixing up the facility, which she did, because that's sort of like a recruiting tool as well. You know, no, top flight free agent wants to come into a building that hasn't been renovated that still looked like it did in 1997. Well, what did she do? She put the money into the building, and it looks fabulous.
Yeah. But it
But other than that, now she's done her, you know, community stuff. We all know that. I think every owner does that, or they have to do it.
Sure.
And if they don't, then something's wrong with them. But other than that, I'm just honestly speaking, we don't know anything about Amy other than what she has done now. What she has done now has pretty much overshadowed what she has shown us prior to that. And I don't know. I mean, it's we look at it as indifferent now. But history will, you know, tell us whether this was a good move or a bad move, and we just got to wait it out.
I have an interesting comment on that. Uh-huh. You just kind of sparked something with me. 615-737-1025. How would you evaluate Amy Adams Strunk as controlling owner of the Tennessee Titans? 615-737-1025. We'll take your calls on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and your text as well. We're live today at the Murphy Center on the campus of Middle Tennessee State University. We'll come back with that next. Chase Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106 for the game. Chase Willie DeMace, 102.5 the game. 106.3 as well. 97.5 here in Murfreesboro. Lots of options to listen to us. Also download that Game Nashville app. We're at the Murphy Center today. 50th anniversary of this building was December 11th. Tonight is the game commemorating that. They're going to wear throwback uniforms. Some of the members of the team from 1972 will be here as well, which is going to be cool. So awesome night at the Murphy Center. We'll talk to Nick McDevitt, the MTSU basketball coach, in about 15 minutes. But your evaluation of Amy Adams Strunk as controlling owner of the Tennessee Titans, you know, as you look at not just the firing of John Robinson, but look at her entire body of work since she's taken over. Now, I mean, you put the hiring of John Robinson in there as well. That was a good thing because look at where the team was and where it went. Mike Vrabel, obviously, is in there. I mean, the team has had a winning season for the last 5 years. They're looking like they're going to do that again, even though they may not. mean, we don't know, but you know, that's the thing. They could win this division at 8-9, but you know, I feel like 9-8 now, potentially 10-6, but I feel like they would have to go out to LA and win this weekend, and I don't feel confident in that right now.
No, I don't either. The Chargers are, you know, these two teams are going in the opposite direction. The Titans are losing guys, and the L.A. Chargers are getting a lot of their guys back. Derwin James is day-to-day. I don't think he practiced yesterday. You have, you know, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are back. They're two big playmaking receivers. Herbert looks a little bit more comfortable in the pocket. He's still getting pressured, but I think they get one of their offensive linemen back. They got their center back. He was injured. I think they may get their tackle back this week. So this team, and then from a defensive standpoint, they're getting some linemen back and some secondary guys back as well. This team is getting healthier while the Titans are getting more injured as a team. And I don't think the way this team looks today, they can go to LA and beat the Chargers. I just think both of these teams are headed in different directions, and the directions the Titans are headed is not good.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I feel like that. And I don't put all that on Vrabel. Now, what I will put on Vrabel is, you know, he's stuck by the offensive coordinator, and I think everybody and their mother at this point is like, Todd Downing is not the answer at offensive coordinator, and none of us are convinced he's going to actually make a change at the end of the season. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. I don't know. But, you know, so that is on the head coach. But the injuries are piling up. You know, why is that happening? Why, you know, that's another thing. In all of this, why do you think that's happening? You look at really the last
injuries?
2 years especially, but and I know every football team deals with injuries, and you hear that all the time. Like it happens in the NFL. Nobody's 100%. I get all that. But it does feel like they're piling up maybe more than normal for the Titans, or is that just because we're right here in it and that's what we see on a day-to-day basis? Or do you think that?
I think I think it may be a little bit of both. I think because we see it on a day-to-day basis, it seems like a lot to us. But I guarantee you, if you go on other markets, say the market that we're going into this weekend, I'm sure the L.A. Charger fans, you know, felt the same way that we felt. Like, man, we have all these injuries, these rash of injuries. You know, you go to Baltimore, I'm sure their fan base feels the same way because they have just as many injuries, or maybe not as many, but they have more key injuries, more importantly, injury to the quarterback that we don't have. So I think it's more so depending on which, you know, market you're in. If your team is fully healthy, you're not talking about injuries. You may be talking about the record, but you're not talking about injuries. But in our market, we're sort of talking about both. We're talking about injuries, and we're talking about, you know, can the Titans hold on to the AFC South?
And that's a big question. If they can.
And you know, Chase, that is surprising.
Oh,
that is really surprising because, what, 4 or 5 weeks ago, what were we saying?
They got it.
They got – this is their division. Hell, they might – I can recall saying at this point the Titans might just get a number one seed because Buffalo was trending in the wrong way. Josh Allen was making bad decisions. Kansas City looked as if they had some chink in their armor. And the Titans were the only solid team. Yeah, they had their injuries, but they were solid and they were winning games. And that was 5 weeks ago. Now it's like, can the Titans even hold on to the AFC South?
To that point, do you think at some, at you know, let's say 3-4 games ago, did we believe that this was a good team?
I think we did.
Yeah, we believed it was a good team. Do you buy into, and you've been on, I'd have to go back and look at, you know, some of these Titans and Ravens teams you played on that you won the division, but do you think that sometimes if you're on a team – and you know you're a good team, but you know you're in a bad division, so it's like, hey, we got this in the bag, that sometimes that sets in, and maybe a little complacency sets in?
Or is that
just not true in the NFL?
I don't think that's true, and I hope that isn't the case in regards to this Tennessee Titans team, thinking the division is so bad that, listen, if we get the 8 games, we're going to win this division. I hope that is not true, but what – I think what is true and what has been shown to be true throughout the NFL, no matter what year it is that in December, and I think we talked about this yesterday with Hutton, in December, in early January, more important, no, in late November into December, that's when we find out who the good teams are and who the pretenders sort of were. At this point, it seems like the Titans are a pretender. Because they started off 0-2, then they went on this run where they were beating bad teams.
Right.
And now they've gotten to the point of the season where we've always said the NFL is a war of attrition. You know, if you can stay healthy, then you're good, especially if you got a good team. But if you don't have a good team and you start getting injured, you might as well forget it. And that's the Tennessee Titans, that 11-on-11 or 22-on-22, they got a solid team. They got a team that can get to the playoffs. I don't know if they can win a game in the playoffs, but they can get to the playoffs. But now that they have injuries, this is not a good team, and it's showing. They are separating themselves from the really good teams, and it's not in a good way. They are falling back. It's like a race. Like you've seen in the Olympics when they're running, you know, I don't know, 5-mile race or whatever the mile race it is, 3-mile race. Everybody gets out, and for the first 2 or 3 laps, it's like it's bunched up. And then all of a sudden, going into that fourth lap, it started to spread apart. And you start seeing one or two guys or girls start separating themselves from everywhere else, from everyone else. Yeah. And that's the Tennessee Titans. They are in the pack where they're being left behind by the really good teams, Buffalo, Kansas City, Cincinnati, who else you want to throw in there? Can't throw the Chargers in there. Well, we'll just say those three teams for now. Those three teams. Well, those three teams are separating themselves from everybody else. You know, the Titans are not in the back, like all the way in the back, But they're in that middle part, like, but they have no chance of catching those three or four teams, you know, or five teams, Philadelphia, Minnesota, teams that have a really good record. They've already gone. They're done. You're not catching those guys. You're trying to hold on to the middle pack, and it seems like you're falling further back to the guys that have no shot at coming in third, fourth, or fifth.
Got a couple of texts here. Chuck says, I don't know how many fans who felt this was a good team just based on how they failed against legitimate contenders. And I'm talking a few – and look, when I say good, good to me means like, all right, yeah, okay, mm-hmm. good defense. Mm-hmm. But the
playoff
offense
capable.
But the offense has had problems all year, and we've recognized that. Uh-huh. We've talked about that. So I get that. Ron says, no, a good defense is all, which, again, a good defense – sometimes that's your best offense, is a good defense. Another, Matt says, Chase, good question. I think she's inexperienced, and that shows, and if she has the wrong people around her, it's going to crash the franchise. However, I think firing John Robinson was a good move. He needed to go. I don't give him much credit for the team's recent success. I don't know how you can't. I don't know how.
How can you not give him credit?
Like, I think some fans, and Matt, good text. Some fans forget he drafted Derrick Henry.
Exactly.
Like, they forget
he drafted
that.
Kevin Byard before Vrabel even got here.
He drafted Kevin Byard. He drafted Kevin Byard because Dick LeBeau came down here to Murfreesboro.
Exactly.
And watched him on his pro day and said, that's a player.
Uh-huh.
And so John looked at him, and they ended up taking him. I mean, that's a fact. So did he miss? Yes. Oh, and also he drafted A.J. Brown.
Uh-huh.
He traded him, but he drafted him.
He drafted all these guys. He drafted Jeffrey Simmons.
Drafted Jeffrey Simmons. So
you know, he drafted Harold Landry.
It's very easy when there's bad to just focus on the bad and forget about the good.
But exactly.
You can't forget about the good.
No.
And I think people do that sometimes with John Robinson. Coming up next, we'll talk to MTSU head basketball coach Nick McDevitt. He is going to join us live at our broadcast location as we are here at the Murphy Center at MTSU, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase McCabe, Derek Mace in line with the Murphy Center at MTSU, my alma mater, as MTSU, the men's basketball team, will take on Chattanooga tonight to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Glass House here at the Murphy Center. And joining us now, Coach Nick McDevitt, head coach of the Blue Raiders. Coach, what's up? How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Derek's excited because shoot-around's going to be a little later, and he gets to watch that. He might get out there. If you need somebody to come out there and hoop it up with your guys,
We need another couple of scout team guys, so we can give him a red jersey this morning, and make him the other team's shooter.
It was funny. We were in an event one time. I think it was – an SEC basketball media days, and Bruce Pearl came and sat down, and you know, we were like, so, you know, you think Derek could fit? And he goes, let me tell you how this would work. I would draw up the play, and every time it would be get the ball to Derek. that's how that would go.
That's right.
To the athlete. But 7-3 to start the season, coming off a big win against Belmont. I know you're feeling pretty good about your squad right now.
Yeah, we are. We're starting to get a little bit healthier. Some of the guys that had some nicks and bruises are starting to get back into playing shape. Justin Buford had a torn meniscus and was out for a while after his surgery. So just having him, another starter, a team captain, just kind of allows us to spread out our team minutes. We like playing aggressive defensively. We play deep in our bench, and all of a sudden when you got a couple guys out like Jalen Jordan, who's
right.
Obviously going to be out the whole year with his torn ACL, but you add JB to that mix, and now all of a sudden you can't play quite as deep as you want to and as aggressive as you want to, because you're not 10 deep, you're 8 deep. And so just getting those guys, getting JB back, getting a couple of other guys just playing experience. You know, Justin Porter had a really good trip when we went to Canada and played St. Bonnie's on the way back. So I like how our team is starting to kind of figure out their roles, and guys are getting more comfortable as the season goes along.
I don't think people realize sometimes how difficult it is to build a program. And, you know, Kermit Davis had a lot of success here. He leaves, you take over, and it's taken a while. You've had to build depth, recruit. get the culture, but it feels like that has started to come together over the last few years because, as we were talking about, you didn't have a lot of depth when you first started here. Now you got that.
Yeah, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it happens everywhere, particularly these days. There are coaching changes, and then you see guys that aren't with the program anymore. They can hit the portal, and they're not there the next year. So our first couple of seasons, to your point, we were dressing 8 and 9 scholarship players, mm-hmm. and now we're playing deeper than that. And that's just you have very little room for error when you're only dressing 8 scholarship players. A couple guys get hurt or in foul trouble or just aren't playing well, and you can't win, particularly at a level like this. You've got to have some experience, some depth, some length, some athleticism, and quite honestly, we were missing almost all of that for a while. Yeah. And so now just having an older team, an experienced team, enough bodies to keep throwing guys at our opponents, it's kind of where you need to be in order to be competitive at this level.
Coach Nick McDevitt is with us, head coach of the Blue Raiders, MTSU. The 50th anniversary of the Murphy Center was December 11th. This is the game commemorating that. Hard to believe that this place has been around that long. Such a cool building, the glass house, glass all the way around it. But how cool is it going to be to celebrate that tonight?
No, it's great. You know, just here we are sitting on the concourse, and you feel like you've got a great seat.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you're halfway up the arena when the bleachers that are up here are pulled back. There's not a bad seat in the house. There have been so many great events in here. I was telling somebody the other day that you think about there are some individuals, particularly in the mid-state area, that some of their most important and biggest moments of their life have been right in here.
Yeah.
You know, graduate from high school because we host a lot of high school graduations.
Yep.
You may have graduated from your high school, your junior college, and MTSU,
yeah.
all in this building.
Yeah.
Come to concerts here for athletes. If you're fortunate enough to be on a really good high school basketball team, this is where the state
yep.
playoffs are.
Mm, yep.
If you come on to play at Middle Tennessee, like a lot of players from Blackman and Riverdale and a lot of the other high schools around the area, now you're playing your college ball here. So when you really start thinking about some individuals that have had big life moments, they're in this building. So it's a lot more than just glass and, yeah. and concrete and seats. It's a really special place. And honestly, to be built at the doorstep of our university
yeah.
makes it that much more of just an iconic building in the mid-state area.
There's a lot of history in these seats, you know.
That's and a good that, way to
and,
say
and
it.
And that's a wonderful thing, a lot of good history. Now, Coach, you talked about the depth and at one point you were only going 8 deep with scholarship players. How do you and your coaching staff navigate that to try to get, you know, to try to build that depth, one, but then try to take advantage of that depth early on so you know who you can depend on later on in the season?
Yeah, you know, you're just trying to always force other teams, too, to play a mm-hmm. little bit deeper than perhaps they're comfortable going. Mm-hmm. And I think when you play more of an up-tempo style, an aggressive defensive style, it forces us, too, mm-hmm. to play deep into our bench. And so you don't have guys that your ninth or tenth guy, they know they're playing. Mm-hmm. They know they're going in. So you don't have as many, and this is our philosophy, you don't have disgruntled players mm-hmm. that when they're not starting, because there's some and some styles, the eighth, ninth, tenth man, they don't go in. Mm-hmm. They don't get in the games. Because the tempo doesn't dictate that their top 7 or 8 guys are that tired.
Mm.
And so for us, if we played 6 or 7 deep with the tempo that we play at, those guys would be dead with about 10 to go in the game. And so our players just they know they're going to be counted on. Our practices are up-tempo. They're intense. And it just carries over to the game. So our players seem to enjoy playing that way. And in order to do that, to your point, mm-hmm. in order to do that, you've got to have 9, 10, 11 guys you know you can count on.
Now, when do you think that started, sort of? Because we've seen that in football where we can kind of sort of pinpoint that up-tempo offense where it started to kick in and then everybody started to mirror it. And now it's just a common thing, up-tempo.
Yeah.
So now you're able to defend it a little bit better. Not to say it's great, but you're able to defend it a little bit better. When did that become a thing in college basketball where it's up-tempo, and a lot of, you know, guys in and out.
Yeah, I think, you know, because there's so many skilled players these days, more teams are able to play five out, four around one, five around none. Big guys that can shoot threes and are some of the best passers on the team at times are the 6'10", 7-foot guys.
See everybody.
Hey, that's right. They can see everybody, but they can also shoot the ball. You look at the kind of the pro model, the NBA model. It's a lot of five out. It's high scoring. Mm-hmm. The fans enjoy seeing it. You watch attendance records continue to go up. And I think some of the rules, obviously, are also geared towards high scoring and the offensive side of the ball. And so you've got to be able to adjust to that and be able to recruit to that as well.
We're talking with Nick McDevitt, MTSU's head basketball coach. Now, you spoke early that when you first got here, it was like, okay, we got to build this thing up because we don't have much, but we got a plan. Now, did that plan also include, you know, the portal guys? How do you sort of handle that as a new coach at a new university? Because some coaches, when they first get a job, they want to, you know, hit the ground running. So they bring in these guys from the portal. And then a year or two later, you see the program dip.
Yeah.
So how did you and your coaching staff navigate that?
Well, we tried to not overdo it in any one area. Tried to build it with a core group that would not only grow old here at Middle, but grow old together. And then in the meantime, be able to intermix that, I guess, with transfer guys, because you've got to find a way to get old. I think there are some leagues that you can afford to be really young and still be good. Well, at the highest level, you can be young and still be good because you got a bunch of pros.
Exactly.
You got one and done guys. Your talent level is really high. And I think sometimes at low major or perhaps the high D2 level, you can have some younger guys that you kind of stole one. And although he's young, he's a lot more talented than the juniors and seniors perhaps in that league. You just don't see that at this level. When you're young and inexperienced, it's usually a bad combo. And so we knew we were going to kind of take our lumps for a while with young players, but that eventually those guys that now they're old, Eli Lawrence, Tyler Millen, Christian Fussell, Jared Jones, some of those guys that they've been in college, but they've been here for 3 or 4 years. And now all of a sudden you get a Teofilo Leonard, who is a high-level talent, a high-level athlete. He's young. But when you can intersperse that and a Justin Buford with an older team, and not only are they old, they're old together. That's what we were wanting to eventually be able to get to.
The portal, NIL, those are things that have really changed college sports.
Dramatically, yes.
We're seeing NIL dip down into the high school level now.
Yep.
How do you – can you plan for that, or is that really a thing that you kind of have to take it one day at a time as it evolves?
It is evolving, and it's all happening at once.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you're dealing with just the portal, and you've got to get used to it. Or just NIL and the ability for players to earn money, but you're dealing with the same players every year. It's both at the same time, and so the landscape is changing really fast. And I think you've got to adapt with it because it's here to stay.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you've got to be really smart with how you administer those things. I think. You know, they're in a lot of aspects, it's kind of a pro model, and it's trying to do that and still remain an amateur association is a fine line.
No doubt, for sure. Coach, appreciate it. Thanks for coming on with us. Good luck tonight against Chattanooga.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
He's Coach Nick McDevitt of MTSU joining us here at the Murphy Center, the 50th anniversary celebration tonight. You can go to GoBlueRaiders.com, get tickets in the end zone at throwback prices for $4. So go do that. Let's pack this place tonight as MTSU takes on Chattanooga. And we'll have more coming here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase Willie, D. Mace, Whitney Houston, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Derek Mason here with you. Appreciate Coach Nick McDevitt for joining us at the Murphy Center. College sports, even high school sports in general right now, Derek, is just nuts. And we knew it would
be. Yeah.
And look, it's funny. I've always said, like, when it comes to transfers, that, you know, you should get one.
Yeah.
You know, get one, that because a decision you make at 17, 18 years old, you know, may not be the right one and could be different as you get older. You may agree to go play for one coach that leaves and you're like, hey, that's not what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I mean.
And you should be able to transfer
Look at Caleb Williams, who just won the Heisman.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he went with his coach.
Yeah.
You know, like, I get that. That's fine. But there's a fine line, too, you know, of how much can you move around. You know, how much, like, does NIL factor in? I mean, I look at a program like MTSU in that, you know, if they get hit on a kid that they recruit out of high school and he's really, really talented, I mean, unfortunately, he's probably gone. Like, he's probably going to transfer to, you know, a bigger program just because they're going to have the resources. And, you know, now you got NIL at the high school level, which I really don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I do know how I feel about that. I don't like it.
I don't like it. I'm just telling you. I don't. I understand some of the situations where I can understand or empathize because, listen, I hadn't always had the means to do the things and to build the life that I have. So don't think when you're listening to me, people, oh, you got – but no, I haven't always had money, believe me. My family, my mom and dad were working parents. And, you know, we had what we needed, but we didn't have what we want. So, and even before that, sometimes we didn't have what we needed at times.
Right.
So I do get that, but it just brings on so much pressure for these kids. They can't be kids anymore, man.
No.
It's like, you know, at 14, 15 years old, I can remember, man, I was just going to school, doing my homework, enjoying life. You know, I wasn't even playing sports at the time. I was just enjoying life, man, and playing with my brothers and sisters. And, you know, we didn't have much, but we had each other. Didn't have to worry about, hey, I got to be the breadwinner for my family. That's a lot of stress to put on an adult, let alone a little kid that's 14, 15 years old. And then when you open it up, NIL for high school, you know, for sports. Well, what does that – if look at it from a psychological standpoint. Look at it from a mental standpoint. What is that doing to these kids when they feel as if at 15, 16 years old, just getting into high school, not only do I got to worry about my grades, my friends, peer pressure, all this other stuff, now I got to worry about being a damn breadwinner for my family.
Yeah.
That's messed up.
It is.
And these people that are making the decision don't give a damn about that. They don't care.
Nope.
You know what their thing is? This is what y'all want. Here you go. Y'all deal with it the way y'all going to deal with it. And I think that's unfair, and I get it. Some parents, that extra money means a lot to them.
Yes.
It does. So I get that part. But also, you got to think about the pressure that is being put on that kid. Like, if he doesn't make it, then now all of a sudden he thinks it's his fault or her fault. That I'm no longer getting, you know, NIL deal. Or if I don't get any NIL deals, period.
Right.
Now, it's just like everybody's pointing at the kid to make the money.
Let me ask you this. Why'd you retire from the NFL?
Because I wasn't having fun anymore.
Right.
I didn't enjoy it.
You were mentally done.
Exactly.
Physically.
I'm not going to say probably. I could have won another two seasons.
Yeah.
But mentally, I was just done.
And you were how old?
I was 37, 36 years old.
Okay. And that's normal.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And you had a hell of a career.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here's going to be the problem, though. Because of all the stress that's now being added to these kids, and the key word there is kids, they're going to be mentally done by 22. And like, what is that going to do? You know, they get Now, they got to get to the league.
Exactly.
Whether it's the NFL, the NBA, what have you. They got to get that contract.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I look at a guy, and this is before all of this started.
Uh-huh.
But look at Andrew Luck. Look at Jake Locker. These are guys that they retired. They retired early mm-hmm. because they were mentally done.
Exactly.
You're just adding even more to it now with some of this stuff. Do I agree that college players should get paid? Yes.
I agree with that.
They should.
Yeah.
They should. But high school, putting this kind of pressure on a 16, 17, 18-year-old kid that doesn't know any better, especially, you know, look, I was very fortunate.
Uh-huh.
I went to a private school. Okay. I get that. Say uh-huh. what you want. I was fortunate. I recognize that. Not everybody gets to do that. There are kids that come from, you know, low income and don't have a lot
mm-hmm.
and just happen to be blessed with talent and they make something for themselves. Well, as you said, Derek, like now some of those kids are going to be the breadwinner for their family. And that's pressure that a 15, 16-year-old kid shouldn't have. Now, it's great that they, you know, are getting that,
uh-huh.
but I think parents are going to put pressure on them. You know, their coaches are trying to make them better players. But it used to be, you know, I'm trying to help you get ready for your future. Well, your future is now before you're ready for it. And I'm just worried. I'm worried of where it's going to take things. And it's an interesting mm-hmm. dynamic and an interesting discussion of where we are in collegiate sports and our amateur sports.
It's not even collegiate sports.
Yeah.
Let's call it what it is. It's professional sports on every level. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Because when you start getting paid, you are considered a professional because
right.
you're getting paid for your services in this sport, in the realm of athletics. It was considered, not a professional sport because these kids wasn't getting paid. But now – you might as well – it's professional from the minute they can start earning NIL till the minute they, you know, make it to the NBA, MLB, NFL, or they get on these circuits and they become pros at golf or tennis. And I understand what some people are saying too. Well, you know, these kids that play golf and tennis, you know, they can get money, you know, when they were young too. And you're absolutely right. But at that point in time, we were not talking about the whole. We were talking about a few people possibly having the ability to earn, meaning they were that good that they had the ability to earn money. Now, these kids, the minute they get in high school, I believe this is when it starts, the minute they get in high school, at the age of, what are you, 14 years old? When you get in high school.
Yeah.
So if you are a 14-year-old kid going into high school and people consider you one of the best kids in the country, girl or boy, you're going to start getting money. And that's cool. But now you're going to start having to be in some cases, the breadwinner for the whole family. I think that's unfair. That's too much pressure to be putting on a kid at 14 years old. That, okay, now I got to go out here and perform every week. Every week I got to go out here and perform because I got to keep this NIL deal for my family.
Right. It's
just tough.
It's something.
It's tough.
It's something for sure. Coming up next, how can the Titans stay positive through the tough spell that they're in right now? We'll discuss that coming up next. Chase Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.